The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you with the help of our sponsor, AWeber, the world's leading small business email marketing and automation service provider. Since 1998, AWeber has helped more than 1 million small businesses and entrepreneurs through its suite of web-based email marketing, automation tools, and education. AWeber, the best option when it comes to marketing your business. The podcast is also brought to you by The Alternative Board. Since 1989, The Alternative Board, or TAB, has been one of the leading peer advisory and business coaching organizations for independent business owners and CEOs across the world. By facilitating peer advisory boards, private one-on-one coaching, and strategic planning services, TAB helps business owners improve their businesses in ways that change their lives. And be sure to connect with our affiliate sponsor, GSM Growth Agency. They're boosting e-commerce businesses to 6 and 7 figures in revenue and cover everything from ads and social media influencers to making your website better. GSM Growth Agency focuses on taking businesses from startup success to bigger success, going above and beyond to make sure growth sticks around. They're all about cool ideas, lasting partnerships, and making your mark in the e-commerce world. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's all kinds of factors that are involved. The first 5 years was really brutal. I mean, yeah. most companies don't make it to that.
Make it, market. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's probably like 90% or something like that fail.
Something ridiculously high, yeah. And yeah. Other ones that didn't make it struggle, so
right. It's probably higher. Right. And part of that is a lack of financial capital, yeah. Which was our issue, you know, because we – we had very limited resources, but you know, a lot of discipline comes into play. You know, showing up every day and being productive, and then eventually being effective with what you're producing, creating value for others. You know, without discipline, it just, especially those first 5 years, no one's gonna make it. Yeah, that's
when, under control.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you just have to keep showing up every day. And when I mean every day, I mean every day. I was working holidays, you know, weekends, of course. I didn't take a vacation probably in the first 3 years at all.
Yeah, right.
Just, you had to do what it takes. And not everybody is cut out to do that.
No. Right. They're not able to work hard enough to get off the ground. They just kind of hover.
Yeah, and they just kind of... Yeah. And then another thing is really getting out there and meeting people, networking. And
all right. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. We've got a coast-to-coast episode today. Craig's over in California, and I'm here in New Jersey in the rain. And we got some good stuff to talk about today. He's got a book coming out, and we're going to talk about to hear his story and all that kind of stuff. So if you're listening to us on your favorite podcast directory, and you can do so, please leave us a 5-star review. If you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like us, so we can keep connecting with guests like Craig and like all the other guests that have been on recently. So let's get on with the show.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Craig Cook. I'm happy to be on The Accidental Entrepreneur. I am an advisor, a consultant, and a newly published author with my book, Business Kung Fu. You can learn more at csquaredpro.io. That's the letter C, squaredpro.io.
All right, Craig. So thanks for joining me. I know we had spoken. I think it was because I was running around and I couldn't be on video or something like that. And I forget how we connected, maybe through Podmatch. Was that possibly?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Get a lot of good guests through Podmatch. Yeah. It's a good website.
Yeah, thank you for having me here today. And by the way, it's raining over here too. So hey.
Oh, is it raining there too? That's funny. Okay, so why don't we talk, because I know you got a book coming out. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Okay.
But why don't we tell your journey, your entrepreneurial journey? I know you've started a company when you were younger, you exited that company, got a lot of stuff going on. So why don't you take us back and take us through the story, all the trials and tribulations.
Okay, sure. So the quick summary of the creation story.
Don't make it too quick.
Okay, all right, very good. Okay, so at the age of 25, I started my company way back in the 20th century. 1996, I started a digital first company way before that was ever a term, doing digital transformation work, actually, before that was ever a term. And what it was called rhythmnet.com, and we were marketing independent music online. I started it with a couple friends from college.
Okay.
We had very limited resources. We just threw in $1,300 a piece, and I had a computer, and that's how we started it. And we struggled.
You would take the music of the local bands, whatever, you would convert it to digital. And then where did you put it? There was no cloud in those days. So what did you do with it?
Well, we had created a website called rhythmnet.com. And there really wasn't the cloud per se, like everyone knows it today. Like everyone's utilizing the cloud. This is when websites were brand new, 1996. There was only 30 million people worldwide connected online using the internet.
Yeah, I don't think I heard about the internet till 92, maybe. So,
it was early days.
Could anybody play the music? Like, there wasn't a player to download it to, was there?
No. So what we did was we took the CDs and then we created 30-second song samples. And we saved them in what was called at the time AIFF, which was the Macintosh file format, and then .wave, which was the Windows file format. So we uploaded those file formats, and people would actually be able to download those and listen to them natively on their Mac or PC, depending on what they had. And that there was no MP3s back then. There was no real players back then. So that was what was available at the time. And then if people liked that music, they discovered these bands, read about them, listened to the song samples, they could actually purchase their CDs through a secure server that we set up way back in 1996.
And you would send them the CD, right? So it was really a way to promote the music and get them to buy what in those days was discs. That's all we had. But that was pretty advanced for where we had come from.
Yeah, absolutely. And in those days, everyone was afraid to buy things online using their credit card. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And I guess you really didn't have the bandwidth to download like a 3 or 4 minute song, right? I mean,
no
way.
When we started, it was 14.4 modems, and then it jumped up to 28K. And then all of a sudden it went to 56K, I think maybe in that first year. We're like, 56K. Yeah,
dial-up. So DSL was like high speed.
Yes, later. DSL. No. Yes, that was the big thing. Ooh, DSL is coming. And then slowly but surely.
Yeah, crazy. Okay, so was that just a little entrepreneurial venture? Didn't go anywhere? Did the company grow from there? Or,
well, it was a big struggle those first couple of years trying to make that model work. After about the first year in business, we started getting these requests like, hey, you know how to do this internet thing. Can you build a website for our company? And we're like, yeah, sure. And we did that. And after fielding some requests like that, after into the second year, just that light bulb moment, 1998, we can actually make good money for the time we spend doing websites for companies. Let's keep doing the music thing. We'll just put it off to the side and let's focus on doing websites for companies and rebranded as RhythmNet Design Group and focused as a website design company. And I saw the vision, though, for the future of a marketing agency that it would need to combine online and offline methods to create these like more integrated solutions. And that's what we started working towards. That's how it was coming. So that's what we started working towards.
You said you started RhythmNet when you were 25. So now you're what, 28?
Yeah, so I was 28. 27 turning into 28. Yeah, at the time. Birthday's in October, so late in the year. Yeah.
Okay. But so all of your entrepreneurial ventures have really been in tech. It's been all digital marketing, and before digital marketing was even a word, really.
Yeah, before it was even a word. Yes, absolutely. Now, I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. I was very fortunate to grow up in a small business environment. My mother had a very small restaurant, like 14 tables. Okay. And I started working at a very young age. I started washing dishes when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, labor laws now, but you know.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was what it was. You know, it's good. You know, otherwise, I'd have been by myself, you know. So,
yeah.
Did that. And then at 13, I became a busboy. And, uh-huh. And then at age 16, I became a waiter. And it was great. That restaurant environment teaches you so much about being organized, being efficient, working under pressure and stress, communication, salesmanship. So it was a great experience that I wouldn't trade for the world, actually. And they also had a small automatic fire sprinkler business. And they would design
like commercial stuff.
Yeah, commercial stuff. Yeah, it was a small company, and they did okay in the mid '80s for a time. But then when the recession, in the early '90s hit, it just like decimated everything. Yeah, it was interesting. So it was very interesting to grow up in that environment, and there was kind of like a rise and a fall, and to be in the midst of all that and working at both companies. I'd also go work in the sprinkler shop, cutting and fabricating pipe, and sometimes out in the field, and that's, you know, very hard labor. Yeah, pipe is really heavy. Yeah.
And that company went under, huh?
Yeah. Well, it really shrank to be a very bare minimal operation, just like 4 to 6 people. What maybe at the peak is maybe around 30 people, went down to about 4 and 6. And that's at that time I had graduated college, and I was starting to help them with automation, you know, taking all the manual processes and bringing it onto the computer, invoicing, sure, accounting, and all that stuff. And I was helping them out. And at the same time, I was learning about the internet. And then it just, you know, working with family and family dynamics and where the situation at hand, just one thing led to another, and I decided to, you know, start this company. And just because the enormous opportunity I saw where the internet could become based on my research.
Yeah, of course. So what was your, what did you study undergrad? Did you study business? Did you study, you know, computers?
I was a business major. My major was operations management with a minor in marketing. Yeah, but I volunteered for what was called the Multimedia Design Center that was run by one of the professors in one of the business courses I took. And it had a whole bunch of Macs, and it had Photoshop and Quark Express and Illustrator and then Microsoft apps too. And I taught myself all these applications, and I was there to help other students and faculty learn how to use these applications to create materials. So I learned a lot by volunteering for that Multimedia Design Center. And that gave me a great foundation, technical foundation. And then once I graduated from school, you know, helping my parents out, I was just reading all the time. And then I taught myself HTML programming, you know, bought a couple books. And then I just started teaching myself everything along the way. Because, yeah, in college, they didn't teach any of this internet stuff. Even some of the computer classes I took, there wasn't any of that. Only, I also had another job on campus that I worked for a couple professors. And my first introduction to the internet was email. One of the professors would travel all around the country, and I'd be able to email her. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. I can actually email her, and she gets back to me like immediately, you know, at the time. I mean, today it's like, yeah, whatever, text, instant message, everything, no big deal. But at the time, I was like, well, that was my first introduction to the internet. I was like, wow, this is fascinating. Personal
stuff. Yeah, I mean, look, everything's relative. I remember we got to college, we had Macintosh computers with the little 3.5-inch discs or whatever they were.
Yes.
And they'd pop out, fill up, and we thought that was the coolest technology you'd ever saw, with a mouse. And you know, now it's like the power of everything that you can do is ridiculous. Most of the stuff you couldn't even do that we do now, we didn't even have the internet, what, didn't have the infrastructure for that kind of stuff. So, but I think you're right. I think, you know, the people that were in the business like you, could see that the world was changing. It wasn't going to be, you know, big advertising. You got to buy things in a magazine. You got to mail out flyers. You got to do it. Just, you could get to people relatively easily, you know,
at a low cost.
Yeah, at a very low cost. I mean, I remember when I started, there's a book that I love. It's called The Accidental Entrepreneur. That's funny. It's called The Referral of a Lifetime. And it is a story. It's like 100 pages, but it's like a Ken Blanchard series type of book, like Gung Ho and those other books. It's like 100 pages. And it's a story about this. I think it was a woman who went into a coffee shop. She was having a lot of trouble. And she went through this whole journey where the I don't know if he was a barista or just a coffee guy or whatever, said, you know, come in tomorrow. My friend Craig's going to sit with you. And she met these people along the way of how they would keep in touch with their clients. You know, it was a sales book about learning to keep in touch with their clients. But in those days, we had to mail like postcards to send out newsletters. And then it's all been, updated now. But now you can create a mailing list and keep in touch with people and, you know, segment it and all kinds of crazy stuff that way you can keep. It's like marketing's really just gone nuts. You know, you visit a website and they know like your underwear size and your favorite fruit. And they're like, Craig, you know, you should take a trip to this island where you can wear your bikini and eat mangoes. And you're like, what? How do you even know that?
Right.
So it's, I think it's really come a long way. So what happened with that company? Did you run it for a long time? Did you sell it, start a new company?
So, the company. Yeah. So RhythmNet, .com, we rebranded as RhythmNet Design Group in 98, like I mentioned. And then with that vision, kind of worked towards fulfilling that vision of being a real integrated agency. And then we rebranded as Rhythm Interactive in 2004 with that model, because we had picked up all these different capabilities. And then that helped us land larger companies, like medium to large enterprise companies that we started doing work for. And then years later, we rebranded as just Rhythm. And then eventually, as we got onto a really great growth spurt, landed on the Inc. 5000 list 5 years in a row. Got best places to work, top places to work 4 years in a
row. How many employees did you have at that point?
At our peak, we were at 47 employees.
Okay.
Yeah, there was no
work in those days, right?
I'm sorry, what was that?
There was no remote work in those days. You had to come to an office, right?
Yeah. We had our own office. And I think maybe at the time we had a couple remote workers, but it was pretty much, Monday through Friday, everyone's in the office except for a couple of people that are remote. And we had actually even acquired our own office building in 2009, kind of a other side story, but it really helped us scale into that growth mode. And then in 2019, we actually sold the company to a world-class creative digital agency out of New York City.
The timing was perfect.
It was. It really was. Looking back, it's like, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
You wait 6 months and you'd probably be like, we're going to put that deal off, you know?
Yeah. And actually, and that had happened because it was right around 2016, we went out in the market looking to get the company sold, and there was people making offers, and there was this one in particular that we were very close on, and we had a bad month, and we're in the meeting, they're like, that's interesting, well, let's see how the quarter ends up. And we're like, oh no. And then they were just gone after that. They were just gone. So it took another probably year and a half just to get that momentum built back up. And yes, fortunately, just in time, like you said, I'm very grateful, no regrets. And then I stayed on 3 more years as CEO in the role that I was in.
To run the company.
Yeah, to keep running the company. And then I left in early 2022. I finished a 26-year run. I equate each year to a mile, so it's like I ran a marathon.
Right.
And I need to rest. So I took the
company yourself. Did you have partners, investors?
We started Rhythm. I had two other partners.
Okay.
One of them, unfortunately, just didn't work out. So right around 1998, 99, had to have him exit out.
Okay.
And then had one partner all the way through, you know, till
got it
sold. So
got it.
Yeah.
But you were there, you stayed on as their CEO during the years of the pandemic.
Yes. Yes.
That must have been challenging.
It was a challenge. You know, we had a number of clients that got hit pretty hard from it, like a real estate client of ours. They're their largest privately held real estate company in the country. And right. they had residential and retail and office and resort properties. And now they got hit hard, and they were one of our biggest clients. We also did a lot of work for America Honda Motors, working mostly with their Acura division. And they got hit hard.
stop selling cars.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, it was
closed, right?
Yeah, it was tough. But then we had other clients that actually got even busier. So it was kind of a wash, but the amount of effort that was required just to maintain the same level of business was a monumental amount of extra effort, because it was just crazy, you know, just, you know. Yeah, that was an interesting year, but we got through it. I mean, we were still profitable, you know, made a decent amount of money and weathered the storm. But
was your contract contingent on anything? Like if they lost a certain amount of business, it would revert back to you and you had to unwind the deal, nothing like that, right?
No, nothing like that. You know, there was definitely performance markers, objectives, targets to KPIs. Hit. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But that was more for like bonus or earn out payments and things of that nature. So, but nothing like that where it would revert back. No, it was a solid deal. Great deal. Great company. They do some of the biggest stuff in the world when it comes to digital marketing, websites. Solid. So it was a solid deal and a great experience. And yeah, in 2022, taking the rest of the year off, I just decided to kind of define that next chapter. What's the next chapter going to look like? Because I can't just sit around and do nothing. That would
it's a little hard.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
Not cracked up with it's meant to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And you got to be of service to people.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It'd be really selfish of me to just sit around and do nothing and not share, you know, my expertise with others, you know?
Right. Well, what would you say? So you go back, you did have a business degree, right? Undergraduate.
Yes.
But a lot of it probably was learned on the job. So what was the hardest part about, you know, running and growing your company? Because, you know, frankly, a lot of people start small businesses and they're not able to scale like you did. Mm-hmm. And they're in your space, right? They're digital marketing agencies, are one or two people, and they're doing business and they got some clients, whatever. And they're not able to scale and get into work with bigger clients. So what do you think, like, what did you, you know, what was the hardest part of doing that? And what, how did you do it? Like, why did you have that in you and other people don't?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think there's all kinds of factors that are involved. The first 5 years was really brutal. I mean, most companies don't make it to that.
Make it, market. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's probably like 90% or something like that fail.
Something ridiculously high, yeah. And other ones that didn't make it struggle, so
right. It's probably higher. Right. And part of that is a lack of financial capital, which was our issue, you know, because we – we had very limited resources, but you know, a lot of discipline comes into play. You know, showing up every day and being productive, and then eventually being effective with what you're producing, to creating value for others. You know, without discipline, especially those first 5 years, no one's going to make it. Yeah, that's
when, under control. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you just have to keep showing up every day. And when I mean every day, I mean every day. I was working holidays, you know, weekends, of course. I didn't take a vacation probably in the first 3 years at all.
Yeah, right.
Just, you had to do what it takes. And not everybody is cut out to do that.
No. Right. They're not able to work hard enough to get off the ground. They just kind of hover.
Yeah, and they just kind of. Yeah. And then another thing is really getting out there and meeting people, networking. And I had made this one contact with a CD manufacturing plant. So as we kept the music thing on the side, as part of getting the skills for that more integrated agency that I mentioned earlier, I started learning how to do print production, which then we ended up getting into designing the packaging of music CDs and then brokering the printing and the CD replication. So we learned that to do so is helping the music site, but then also to do print work for companies. And this one gentleman that worked at one of the CD manufacturing plants, we were, him and I just really hit it off great. And he started referring tons of companies over to us. And it was a great relationship where we were making great money doing a lot of package design and printing, brokering the printing of the packaging for CD-ROMs and then and the disc replication as well. And then that got us into eventually learning how to do CD-ROM authoring. So I taught myself, at the time it was called Macromedia Director, how to actually design and program CD-ROM applications. And then with the experience of the printing and the disk replication, being able to do that. And then we ended up creating our own proprietary, more of a methodology utilizing the internet to actually update a CD-ROM and track the user behavior of CD-ROMs. And no one out there was doing it. And it was able to break into the pharmaceutical space. And
you were like the early days of cookies.
Yeah, exactly. And we had an awesome 10-year run working with all the big pharma companies doing all these like patient education, mostly CD-ROM applications. And we would do runs of 100,000, 500,000, a million units. And it was
And you would produce it for them? You would print the CD-ROMs and load them up and everything, the whole thing?
We did everything. We designed and programmed the entire CD-ROM application. We would do the package design, and then we would broker the printing and the disk replication and ship it to them. So they didn't have to worry about a thing. We did everything.
It was one of those things you'd put in, it would automatically run the marketing piece or something.
Yeah, you put the CD-ROM in, it would automatically open up the application. And then we had this little process where they would opt in, you know, to get updates so that the CD-ROM would get updates. And then we had also integrated it with email software. Because we were one of the early adopters of email marketing. I think it was back in like 2004, we became a reseller for what was called ExactTarget, which eventually got acquired by Salesforce.com. Yeah, ExactTarget became the largest email marketing provider out there. And we were one of the early resellers of that platform. And we had integrated that application with our CD-ROM technology. So it's a great solution where we get people to opt in. So they receive emails, CD-ROM would get be updated. They would get the user behavior would be tracked. And then we'd even message to the desktop because that we figured out how to do this other piece of technology where when they opted in, like every 30 days, it would bring up just a message on the desktop. They didn't even need to be using the CD-ROM. And it would just say, hey, it's time to refill your prescription. Like that. So, it was interesting. Good times.
So clearly you have vision. You're obviously a good salesman. You have the technical background and maybe had good tech people to build what you wanted to build. I find that as a business owner, the hardest part with this whole thing when you're growing, right? So now you're scaling, you're getting more employees, whatever, is the leadership side of it, like being able to manage people and empower them and get them to buy into your vision. Oh, and I think a lot of people fall off that bridge when they're crossing it to get to the other side because they just can't do it. So do you think that just came naturally to you? Was it something that you had to, you know, work at being a leader, you know, in order to, because I think a lot of people don't buy into, like, you're right, everybody's on the boat. And if they're not all rowing, he's got a bunch of people sitting there and not doing anything. So I think that that's a skill that I see. I've done this 300 some odd times interviewing, you know, entrepreneurs. It falls short every time where they don't, you know, they don't get it and they don't. So you obviously did. How did that come about? What challenges did you have?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, there are some aspects to my wiring, say, that lend itself to some natural leadership, but I really had to learn a lot. You know, even if we're naturals at anything, you have to work on your skills and develop your skills to a much higher level. So a lot of that came from just mistakes, you know, through interpersonal interactions with employees and partners and so forth, and just a lot of lessons learned. But one big thing that is extremely important that I think this came a little more natural to me, and maybe because I was so busy and so stressed. When you're an entrepreneur, you're doing everything. So I was doing designing, programming, sales, project management, you know, all these, all the things, right? And as you get so busy, you don't have time for everything. All right, I need to get someone on board. I need to relinquish a hat, right? Now, I think what you're talking about where people get stuck is they don't know how to let go and trust.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like, oh, it's just easier if I do it. I'm too busy to teach this person. I don't have processes in place now. So the new person you bring on can't teach the other people what to do and all those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It's a mindset that you just get in your own way. It's like, oh, I'm not going to take the time to show this person how to do it because I could get it done faster.
Right, exactly. But that doesn't help. Ultimately, it hurts the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have the time, or I'll get it done faster, or they won't be able to do it as good as me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But really, if you want to be successful in growing a business, it's on you to do that. It's your responsibility as a leader to make sure that you hire the right people with the right skills. Okay, that's part of it, but they're still going to need some training. They still, even though they might have some great talent and knowledge, they have their ways of doing things, and their ways of doing things might not match the way you want things to be done.
Right.
But how are they going to know that unless you actually show them and train them, right? And so that has to happen. And then you can't be micromanaging them on top of them, because then you're just wasting your own time.
Right.
Because you should be out doing something else, like selling. Right.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Like trust, let go, let them make mistakes also.
Right.
Yeah. People need to be comfortable with knowing that there's going to be some failure points, and it's okay, because then that's how they learn. I mean, that's one thing I noticed. I learned so much because I made a ton of mistakes. Like, I'm very good at what I do. But that's because I made a ton of mistakes. Right.
Well, I think you want to make a lot of mistakes. So you don't make big ones, but you make a lot of small ones, and you learn and learn and learn and learn and learn. And then you don't make big mistakes that you weren't, or you're trying to avoid to begin with, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, still on occasion, there could be some big ones. I remember there's this one time we were working on a project for a big national bank. And it was a CD-ROM project. And the problem with CD-ROMs is they had to be like totally right, because once the printing and the manufacturing of the discs are done, it's out.
Yeah, you can't recall 10,000 discs or something, right?
That's right, right?
Yeah.
So this one particular job, it became a rush job towards the end. And rush jobs are horrible because whenever there's a rush,
some you're going to screw up.
Yeah, that's right. And I knew better. But it was rushed, and one of my top guys, he was finishing up the project. I was out of town, and we sent it off. We manufactured, I think it was 100,000 units, sent them out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Then I got a call like 3 days later. Hey, Craig, these discs aren't working. I was like, what do you mean they're not working? Yeah. What are you talking about? Well, once you're like about, you know, 5 minutes in, it just stops. And I was like, oh my God.
So it started playing, but then it would crash.
Yeah. Yeah. There was something going on where it would get stuck. And I said, well, let me call you back.
Yeah.
So I checked, and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. So, and then I got back in town, and I went over with my guy, and he's like, oh no. He had made this mistake, and he didn't test it properly. But I made the mistake by allowing the rush also.
Right. Well, yeah, right. But what was it, a programming mistake?
It was a programming mistake. So it ended up getting caught in a loop. And when it go past this one decision point.
Right.
Yeah. So It was a hard one. I think it cost us like 50 grand at the time. This is back probably like 2006 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So put that in today's dollars. You know, it was a lot then.
Send out a link to a website, the people go, and if you have to fix it, you change the website.
That was the beautiful thing about websites. Like, hey, this is wrong. Oh, okay, no problem.
Get in, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the CD-ROMs, printing, all that, it was great in some respects, but it had its disadvantages in others. And the same thing with the challenge with websites was, like, it was so easy to update, like you said. It was so then it enabled clients to be like, oh, yeah, can you change this? Oh, yeah, can you change this? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like constant flow. And then that's costing you a ton of money because you're just constantly, you know, rather than getting everything at once, constantly fielding these requests until you learn better and get processes and systems in place and how to monetize that flow.
Yeah, right. Process a client. Yeah. That leads me into another question, though. So how did you start developing your own processes for employees? Like, did you have to do that yourself? Because I think a lot of people, that's another area that they fall short on. They don't have the processes to run the business in, you know, without that. I mean, they have the process in their head, but getting it down on paper and getting it to the employees so they can do it without you is hard. So how did you, and a lot of people fall short on that. So how did you get that done? Do you remember?
Yes. So I am very systematic. Or I love organization and structure. So I would take the time to create, even when it was pretty much me doing everything, I was
documenting things and stuff.
Yeah. And at least getting, okay, well, this is how to, yep. Yeah. It was a good habit of being organized, structured in my approach. Yes. It, where I did lack at times was lacking the documentation because it was like all in my head, but I would have the processes. And then once people came on, I would show them and train them. But then it got to a point where as we got more employees, that documentation was necessary because it wasn't me that was able to show everybody everything. All of a sudden, you know, with more employees, you know, they had to train people. So what happened was it was more documenting through a team effort. So myself, business partner, top employees, when you kind of get forced in it because the mistakes happen, they're costly and like, we know better. We should have done this. This is the way we do it. Why did this happen? This person didn't know. All right. We got to document this because we need to ensure that people are following process. So it was kind of out of force many times until we really learned better and it became a better habit that we would start documenting the processes.
Yeah.
And it was a team-based approach. And it was good that way because, you know, multiple minds together usually can come up with the best approach and the best process as long as someone is really the leader facilitating that effort.
No, it's like being a chef and running a big kitchen. You don't teach anybody how you make your recipes all in your head. I've taken over organizations, you know, as an advisor, where you can tell there's one or two people that are like the key people. Like if these people drop dead tomorrow, everything shuts down in this place. And they had to, you know, you got to start building in systems to not to make them irrelevant, but to allow them to, you know, send them on vacation for 8 weeks and see if you can still run the business.
Well, and it's funny you say that because actually, I think it was around 2009. I did make a statement to like my top staff that my goal was to make myself irrelevant.
Yeah. Well, that's the ultimate
goal. The ultimate goal. Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you can just work on the business and scaling the business and growing the business. Everybody else can run it.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was thinking there was like two options. One, that it would become self-sustaining and kind of run itself. And I could be like, go off and do whatever I want. Or two, sell the company.
Yeah.
First one didn't work out. It's kind of fantasy land.
Right. Exactly. It's true. It's very hard to exit if you're the guy they need.
Yes. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
Professionals have that problem all the time.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. You know, fortunately, we had built up enough of infrastructure, processes, systems, team that it became a machine and was able to continue. The company still is alive today, going strong, and it's great.
Yeah.
That's because of all the systems and people that are in place to
for company. And you know that's rare. Mm-hmm. It's rare. It's even rare when you sell the company that the other company keeps it going. A lot of times the business fail in the hands of the new owners because they're not you. You know, it's harder. So, all right, why don't we do this, Craig? Why don't we take a little break? Got a couple of commercials I got to play. Then we come back. We'll talk about what you're doing now, your book, and, you know, some advice for people who are listening.
Okay, great.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Looking to market and grow your business? Or perhaps you're just getting started and want to hit the ground running. AWeber is the best choice for online email marketing and automation of your business. From maintaining a subscriber list to drip campaigns and landing pages, AWeber gives you tools and integrations that make marketing easy and fun. As our partner and sponsor, we use all their tools to promote the podcast and market our law firm. AWeber, the best alternative for online marketing. For over 30 years, the Alternative Board, or TAB, has built a thriving community of forward-thinking CEOs and business owners who want to radically improve their companies. Through unique combinations of one-on-one business coaching, participation in monthly TAB board meetings with other non-competing owners, a suite of strategic tools, and customized strategic planning workshops, TAB membership can deliver greater strength to your business and a better work-life balance for you and your family. All packaged in a streamlined and affordable service that the people at TAB invite you to try risk-free. Are you struggling with managing advertising due to a lack of time or expertise? Perhaps you're facing challenges in scaling ads for your store. Are you feeling lost when strategies have no success? GSM Growth Agency is your reliable partner in overcoming these business challenges. Feel the impact of collaborating with a team dedicated not only to short-term goals, but also to building long-term partnerships and achieving sustained success. Embark on an exciting journey to redefine the possibilities of e-commerce and create a legacy of unparalleled excellence. Take decisive action now. Follow their link in the show notes to receive a complimentary audit of your Shopify store conducted by a GSM expert. Propel your e-commerce game to new heights with GSM Growth Agency. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
All right. Thanks for your patience there a little bit. Some people pay me a little bit of money, so I got to, you know, recognize them, and I appreciate that. So now we're talking Craig Cook 2.0, right? So
yes.
This is as of 2022, you said, right? You retired from the business, you were done with your contract, and they're off doing their thing, and they don't call you screaming and say, Craig, we're having problems. Hopefully not, right?
No.
It's all good. So what did you take time off when you finished that? Like said, oh, I'm not going to do anything for 6 months, or?
I did. I decided to take the rest of the year off. So there was in March, and I'd say within 6 months, I felt a little anxious, honestly. Yeah, sure.
Working for 26 years, it's hard to turn it off.
Yeah.
I'm 100%. Sure it was great at the beginning, right? First couple of weeks, months, you're like, oh, this is great. And after a while, you're like, do something with my life.
Yeah. I think those first couple of weeks, I was just like, floating in a cloud, like peace and you know, all this weight off my shoulders. But after like 6 months, I was like getting a little anxious. Like I really need to start thinking about the next chapter. So I did start defining that. You know, what is that going to look like? And at the end of the day, I thought, well, at this stage of my life, I really want to share. I want to help people. And one of the greatest joys that I got out of running my company was when I got to see my team members blossom. And really flourish in their roles.
Sure.
For example, one of our team members, our chief creative officer, I started putting him into pitch presentations. We had to compete a lot for business against other agencies, and we had to do these big sales pitches, presentations to the potential client.
Sure.
It was a big old dog and pony show, right?
Right.
So I started bringing him into that, and he was pretty nervous in the beginning. Like, oh, I got to speak. I got to present. Like, oh, my God. Right? Well, right. over time, he actually ended up being the best presenter in the company. It was awesome just to watch him perform and in a sense, like really perform. And I even got getting a call from two different people at this one company we were doing work for that we always had to compete for all the business, the RFP'd everything. Yeah. And they left messages for me, both of them separately, saying, wow, that was the best presentation we've ever seen. And they saw presentations from all kinds of vendors. And it was really because of this person that really blossomed. And that stuff like that just brought me the greatest joy.
Sure.
So in recognizing that, really helping others to develop, and it's about, at this point, share and empower others to fulfill their potential.
Sure.
And that's through creating things and sharing my expertise and knowledge. So that's where my book came in as a component to help inspire and empower others.
So are you doing consulting now, coaching, advising, you're on advisory boards? What are you doing besides being an author?
So at the beginning of 2023, mm-hmm. I announced like, hey, I'm ready to do some consulting work. There's a couple things that, here's the two main things I'm doing. And I picked up some clients right away. And that work has been mostly focused on brand development and marketing communications, emphasis sure. on digital, and a lot mm-hmm. of strategy work. That's been most of the consulting work that I'm doing. I'm also what's called a medical Qigong practitioner, which sounds totally out there and different because it is. But
yeah.
I came across that in 2014, and it was a big game changer for me in running my company, medical Qigong. It just got me so centered and balanced and able to mitigate stress and manage through all the challenges that are coming.
Is that some sort of an Eastern discipline or?
Yes, it's a practice that's thousands of years old out of China.
Okay.
And it's tied in with Kung Fu. There's actually martial Qigong, and that was my first exposure to Qigong when I was younger, studying Chinese Kung Fu. But the medical part is different. There's the martial, medical, and spiritual. Those are like the three main branches. So I've been a practitioner for the past 9 years, and I actually work with people. I've conducted over 800 sessions with people over the past 9 years. I'm enrolled in a doctorate program right now for Chinese energy medicine that I'll be finished up with in August. So with that couples well with leadership development.
So that was before you left the company. You said it's 9 years. So
yeah. So I was learning and studying and practicing that in the evenings and on the weekends mm-hmm. with people. So yeah, it was just a passion. I was like, wow, I just want to dive in and really absorb this as much as possible.
Because it's personal development. Right.
Exactly. Personal development. It was such a game changer for me when it came in, because at the time I was so off-centered, off-balance from all the stresses of managing,
sure.
a growing company, juggling family life, et cetera, et cetera. So, so that was a big game changer. I want to share that. And it couples well with leadership development. So I see with like workshops, retreats, seminars mm-hmm. that'll be in the future. I've done a little bit here and there just to experiment and validate. Actually, last week I was at a mastermind event and I was leading people through some Qigong practices in the morning. And
so that's part of your book?
It is in the book. What I mentioned, how it came across as a game changer for me. Mm-hmm. I just touch upon it lightly. That's probably going to be a more follow-on book when I get delved deeper into that practice.
Right.
It's related, but it is separate. The book is mostly really centered on how I took the principles and lessons I learned from Chinese Kung Fu and applied it to my business and how I structured it, organized it, my mindset, applying discipline.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, now I know the secret to your processes and how you developed all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, especially like discipline. If we mm-hmm. Take a look at discipline and your question earlier in the conversation, like those first 5 years, like what people are struggling, what makes that difference between success and failure? And a lot of it is discipline.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. I mentioned showing up every day, right? And that's how I break it down in my book. I have three aspects of discipline, and that is showing up, being productive, and being effective.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that effectiveness, meaning that what you're producing is of value to others.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think isn't the old adage that successful people do the things that unsuccessful people are unwilling to do? It's not that they can't do it. You don't have some magic ability to do something that other people can't do if they were disciplined and they spent the time being a student of whatever and were organized and stuff. But there's no barrier to being that way. It's just a mindset type of a thing. So
you nailed it. You know. That's right. And I'm not special. I'm just like, you know, every other dude out there. And it's really having the proper mindset. And that's at its core. That's what my book is. It's a mindset book geared towards entrepreneurs to help them on their entrepreneurial journey. You know, overcome
so now, because you're a vision guy, you know, you're always thinking like me. So where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, maybe you'll build another company, but it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe I'll get some bug that really makes me want to start a whole other venture. But I like the independence and freedom I have right now. And I envision that I'll write more books. I'll do a lot more speaking at conferences, et cetera, because that's just another way to help inspire and empower others. That's my purpose, to create things that inspire and empower others to fulfill their potential. Books, speaking. There's the possibility of creating community, some sort of platform, community where I can share expertise and get like an online community, maybe some sort. Yeah, like an online community, and then start to couple that with workshops it's like some sort of destination or location where people can come together for workshops as well. So yeah, you have the online and offline component. So right. a variety of things that where it all helps to ladder up to my purpose.
Very good. Very good. Well, I don't know if you have any other advice for people. You've given a lot. So, you know, things about being disciplined, things about being organized, things about getting through the first 3 to 5 years of the business cycle. A lot of people don't make it that far. But is there anything else that if somebody's starting out in business that you would do differently that they should be aware of when they're getting started to move forward on a better path?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole number of things. Like my book is like a primer that's really great for the entrepreneurs in the early part of their journey, because there's a number of things. I think one I'd like to expand on a little bit here with the little time that we have left. But so I'll work backwards. A couple things. One, finding a mentor is important.
Very good.
Yeah. It's I had multiple mentors, and they're crucial. Also creating strategic alliance partners where they can help bring work to you that supplements your own business development efforts. That's big. Also making sure you take care of yourself.
I learned just talking about that. Yeah. Before you burn yourself out, right? You think you're young. You should be going 24 hours a day without eating, sleeping and drinking because that's what you're supposed to do. You're starting up a business. You're tough. Mm-hmm. And the only thing you're doing is you're beating the hell out of your body, and then it all comes back to get you later on.
It sure does, and it came back to get me hard because I got eventually diagnosed with a challenge with diabetes. I had it full on, and I had to work to reverse it, which I have naturally, 100%. Yeah. But that's a big lesson, and I have a saying that you need to be of service to self so you can be of service to others for a lifetime.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why you put the oxygen mask on when it drops in the plane.
That's right.
Breathe, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I was feeling it where I wasn't able to perform like I used to. And yeah. I had to change. Now I feel like I did in my 20s. It's great. So if you want to really be of service for a lifetime, you got to take care of yourself. The last thing is... This is a good one for entrepreneurs. I've created this 5 elements of entrepreneurship, and it's based on classic Chinese 5-element theory. 5-element theory in China consists of 5 elements of fire, earth, metal, water, and wood.
Okay.
It's all about balance, and we all have this constitution of those elements. So the five elements for entrepreneurship is passion. Passion leads to discipline. Discipline leads to expertise. Expertise leads to confidence, and confidence leads to faith. And it's a generative cycle, it's called, where one builds up into the other, leads to the other, and the capacity is developed. But it could also reverse and go more of a destructive cycle if you start to lose your mindset. And then there's influences that each of those elements has that can be positive or negative. So I cover that in my book. And at the end of the day, it's important to develop these elements, build the capacity, but keep them in balance.
Those are Chinese elements that you expounded on in your book?
So I took classic Chinese five element theory, which really permeates throughout Chinese culture and martial arts and medicine, also spiritual systems, even music.
Mm-hmm.
It's in everything, really. So I took that thinking, that model, my understanding of that, and I created this five elements of entrepreneurship based on my experience as an entrepreneur. Yeah, and what I see. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So the book's available on Amazon?
It is available on Amazon in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle format. Hopefully, I'll be later in the year putting on other distribution channels, but Amazon for now, and hopefully an audiobook later as well. Yeah. But for right now, print and digital on Amazon.
All right. We'll put a link in the show notes. And what's the best way to follow you and connect with you? LinkedIn, or you have a website, or?
Yes. LinkedIn is just Craig Cook. So LinkedIn/in/Craig Cook. Easy to find.
Okay.
I have a website, and that is csquaredpro.io, the letter C, squaredpro.io. And people can actually download the first chapter of my book for free, which has the five elements, is right in that first chapter.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So, Just
we'll put a link in the show notes for that too.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah. I'm on social channels. LinkedIn and my website are the two best ways to get in touch with me. And if people are interested in more of what I have to say, I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, Craig Cook, on both, TikTok, csquared.777. I'm out there.
All right, Craig, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. It's the afternoon for you too, I guess now.
Mm-hmm.
And have a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Mitch, so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur. Opening and closing music written and performed by Howie Moscovich and Made to Order Music. For information about Howie and his music services, please follow the link in our show notes. If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and most of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinackerlaw.com.
The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted by Mitch Beinacker and produced by Beinacker Law. If you'd like to learn more about our business and legal services, you can find us on social media or visit our website at beinackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.